contending for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
Life can often become weary with seemingly little progress, and we wonder if we're making any real difference as Christians living in the world. We're going to look at this struggle in the life of the Apostle Paul today, as I believe we're looking at a section in 1 Corinthians 18 where he was ready to give up. And it's at the moment of his great despair, discouragement, weariness that the Lord gives one of the most encouraging messages that we have to him in all of the scriptures, meant to be an encouragement to the believer to not lose heart, to realize the Lord is continuing to build his kingdom and nothing is stopping that, even through us when we feel like giving up. This is going to be an important message today from Acts chapter 18 to give us an entire perspective on the callings and vocations that the Lord has given to us. Thanks today for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. Visit us on the web at agradio.org, agradio.org. The number is 888-504-8805, 888-504-8805. We are on Facebook. We are also on Twitter at agradio1. We have a blog there on the web address page, agradio.org. So many resources there for you. We'd love for you to write to us. If you can support us, all of your support you can do right online at agradio.org. Here is now the program from Acts chapter 18, which I have titled, When It Seems Like More Than I Can Bear. Now he walks into Corinth and he sees an entirely different kind of thing. I'm thinking he looks around to what would be a lot like walking in for us, Vegas. Paul's looking around thinking this is a seductive trap. How in the world am I going to minister in this and be effective at all? I know this is right because you just look and trace what the church in Corinth fell into, and you know this is a right assessment. Everything that was recorded of what happened in Corinth was this, in the extreme. One pastor said, at least in Athens, they were interested in debating ideas. And Paul could speak of Jesus and the resurrection and get a hearing, but not in Corinth. The youth in particular were interested in sex and sport more than that, than talking about religion. That sound familiar? I'm sure he felt, I don't even know how headway is possible. Maybe you have experienced this and felt this. If you had been stoned and beaten and imprisoned as this man had been, in cities of lesser consequence, can you imagine stepping into that? Thinking to yourself, I know what's coming. I know what's coming. I'm sure he thought, it's absolutely inevitable. This one scares me to the extreme. How could I say anything against any of this and not have them come down on me? All of a sudden, you start to realize this is kind of our setting. This is kind of our work of ministry is sort of paralleled as we compare what happened in Corinth and what Paul had to face in Corinth. This is us. This is our day. These are the challenges. I mean, look at what you're trying to do. Raise children to love the Lord in this. Look at all the temptations. Look at all the sensuality. Look at all the lure of Babylon and all of its glory. You've got it here. And then try to say it's wrong in some kind of public forum. When it comes to this issue of sexual morality, you know what you're going to get. We're trying to do ministry in this. We're trying to minister the gospel of Jesus and offer him as an answer when this is what's being offered to them. Some of us are weary of giving in to this kind of stuff all the time. We're weary of the seeming little progress. We're weary of the way our children are responding.
can go right down the line here, can't you? You can go right down the line with a whole series of things where you would say this feels like absolutely mission impossible. And the more battle wounds, the more scars that you have, the more the weariness envelops you, the more you are scared, the more you want to give up. Well, what happens from here? Let me make it a little worse first, and then it'll get better. In verse 4, we read that he did his typical thing of going first to the Jewish synagogue, and he was there trying to persuade the Jews and the Greeks. And verse 6 tells us that they opposed him and reviled him. They were calling him a blasphemer. This is an intense assault on him, reviling him. And it almost seems that Paul now breaks away from the whole thing. He has hit rock bottom when he blurts out and says, "Your blood be upon your own head. I'm innocent. From now on, I go to the Gentiles." Done. I'm done with you. I've been a watchman on the wall. I've been Ezekiel sounding the alarm. No one's listening. You did not hear. I'm washing my hands. Using the language of Ezekiel here. I am washing my hands. Your blood is on yourselves. I've been cleansed from this. Huge moment in ministry, actually. Here, shouldn't read over it too quickly. He finally broke from his way of doing things and no longer went to his own family. Hear me. He no longer went to his own family, his countrymen. He was done. Now, you need to know that when you read this, it comes across as sort of frustrated, angry, cold. But this is not what Paul said was going on internally in him. Paul said this in Romans 9, which he wrote from Corinth. "I have great sorrow and unceasing anguish in my heart. Why? For I could wish that I myself were cursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my people, those of my own race, the people of Israel." This is like watching your whole family depart from the faith and leave the church and reject it all. How do you think that make you feel? Many of you couldn't even handle that. Those of your blood. Those of your children. He is totally ripped up inside. Some of you have had loved ones who've done this. Some of you actually have had children who've done this. You see why I'm saying you have one discouraged apostle? He hasn't even made it into the streets of Corinth. And out of the gates, they've all rejected it. How in the world are you going to make headway in this, right? And I think he throws up his arms and he begins to say, "Is this working? Is it?" I said to somebody the other day, look at the masses of people all around us. How many, Lord? How many are believing? How do you not look at this and think to yourself, this is a massive project failure? And our typical response is to say, I just want to tuck away from all of it. I want to be done with it. I want to become a recluse. The more I can just avoid thinking about things, the better it all will be. This is somewhat, some have said, what happened to A.W. Pink at the end of his life. It's a recluse. We fight it all the time. I fight it all the time. It'd just be so much easier to disengage. So much easier. Disengage from all of this. Let somebody else do it, right? Let somebody else. See, I'm not just describing what happens in Christian ministry to pastors. I'm describing what happens to you every day in daily life. The fruit is so little. The problems so many, and we're just often perplexed about it all. At the apex of this discouragement comes the red letters, if you will. I love this. This is where you read and you stop and you say, wow, what a moment in the book of Acts. The Lord comes in the night, and after all this discouragement, the Lord himself encourages him. And I want you to know that this is a long-standing pattern of the Lord that goes all the way back to Abraham. In fact, if you want to turn there, you can. But in Genesis 15, before we look at this, listen to this. In Genesis 15, when Abraham had just been out through the battle at war, trying to recover Lot, he is absolutely exhausted. He is absolutely burned out. He is discouraged. He is weary. And here comes the Lord. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abraham in a vision. Listen to this. And then you can compare it to what we have here. Fear not, Abram. I am your shield and your exceedingly, and your reward shall be very great. Abram, I'm giving you me. Don't fear. Don't fear. Notice particularly here, I wish I had all the time here today to go through the scriptures and show you how often in the moments of great discouragement and great fear, the Lord would come to his sheep and speak like this and talk to them this way. Notice how tender he is. Listen to what he's saying to you. This is all the kind of treatment that comes out of the covenant of grace. I am your God, you are my people. Okay? Listen to it. It's so beautiful. Do not be afraid, but go on speaking and don't be silent, for I'm with you. And no one will attack you to harm you, for I have many in this city who are my people. It's the truth that's always displayed in the scriptures. The Lord is my helper, so I will have no fear. What can mere people do to me? The Lord is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. There is absolutely nothing in life that he has ever left us alone to face. You understand that? Nothing. And as Jesus himself is speaking to his servant here, maybe I've missed it and I'm speaking here off the cuff. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe we find Jesus speaking to Paul like this since the time of his conversion. When he brought him out and struck him down on the road to Emmaus, and now here he is, when he said, I'm going to show him how much he must suffer for my namesake. But here's the Lord lifting up his servant and encouraging his servant and strengthening him through his word. It's just beautiful. I want you to go on speaking and to not be silent, Paul. Don't do it. Open your mouth. You keep doing what I set you apart to do. You give them hope. You keep preaching Jesus. You keep doing what I told you to do. You give them the answer in the midst of this. I don't want you looking around at everything and thinking to yourself, look at the discouragements, look at the effects, look at the fruits, look at all this failure and judge what you are called to do based on that. I don't want you doing that. I want you faithful right here. What I've called you to do is open your mouth and speak. Isn't that just the verse every day for getting up? I've called you. You're my child. You're my son. You're my daughter. Get up. This is what I'm calling you to do. And then he gives this remarkable statement that makes us a little uncomfortable, for no one will attack you to harm you. In this case, that would be true, but that is eternally true. There's nothing anyone can do to eternally harm you. You understand that? Nothing. Here's what's so wonderful about the encouragement. I want you to speak. Hear me speak. Why? For I have many people in this city. Who wants to tell me God's not sovereign? Who wants to tell me there's not a doctrine of election? Who wants to tell me the Lord's not in control of the mission? Here you go. And yet it's the most wonderful news ever. Did you hear it? I've got a whole bunch of people in this city and they don't know they're my people right now, Paul. They don't even know it. So guess what? Guess why you're here? I need you to speak because this is how they're going to come in through the means of you speaking. This is why we're here today, by the way, and you're listening to sermons and preaching and gospel. I was walking the other day, and there was a young man behind me, and he was listening to rap. And listen, it was awful. I heard every word under the sun. I felt like Paul in Athens, provoked. So I said, "What am I afraid of?" So I turned around to him, and I said, "I've got the best news ever in the world for you. Would you like to hear?" Thinking to myself, I'm not sure that's going to work. And you know what he said? "Sure. Sure." So out on Broadway, I sat and I explained the gospel to this young man. And I said to him, "Have you ever heard this?" You know what he said? "No." Now, we live in a post-Christian culture, and we have all assumed people know this. You got a whole generation coming right in front of you. They have never heard some of this stuff, ever. And then I said to him, "Do you have a Bible?" He goes, I think my mom might." All of you young people right now should be immensely thankful. For you hear this every week from your parents and your church and your Sunday school classes, and you have how many Bibles in your homes? Here, this young man has no hope in this world. What if I'd have never spoke? I realize the Lord's going to do his saving, and it's not I'm the one doing the saving. I'm not putting that kind of pressure on anybody. But the reality is that the Lord has called us to witness. The Lord has called us to speak. Speak. You see? What are you afraid of? What's that kid going to do to me? Speak. Notice it says right after this that Paul stayed a year and 6 months teaching. It's a long run for the apostle. God didn't make him come in floods. It wasn't 30,000 in a stadium. It was long, slow work according to Acts standards. But the encouragement was, even though it seemed that everything was falling apart, the Lord was telling him and telling us, "I'm building. I'm saving." Jesus is speaking here and saying, I've given my life to purchase a people. And Paul in Acts 20 is using this language from now on. There are purchased people. There are people purchased by the blood of Christ. That has happened at the cross. That has happened when Jesus died. There's a whole bunch out there for whom I've died that still have not come in. That's why you're here. That's why I'm here. And speak. There's the authoritative speaking that comes, that God sets up. Bring your friends. That's one wonderful thing you can do. Invite your friends. Bring them to church. Because this is the primary way God loves to do it. But most certainly he uses your voice out in the world. Use it. You got good vocal cords. Use it. It's the greatest encouragement, isn't it? I'm with you. Don't be discouraged. Don't fear. I'm never going to leave you. I'm always with you. You've been given a responsibility. Tend to it, and my project's going forward. Well, what happens from here? This is one of the cases where you always want to read providence backwards, because if you're looking at things, it seems like what the Lord just said was a lie, which isn't true. For what happens? The Jews, right after this, begin a united attack against the man, and they grab him and they bring him in front of the Bema seat, the judgment seat of Gallio, the proconsul of the day. And this is all reminiscent of Jesus, isn't it? The Jews tried to charge him that he was bringing a new religion against what was recognized by Rome. The Jewish religion was recognized. This is new. This is what they did to the early Christians. Gallio wouldn't even listen to it. And you stop and you say, ah, the Lord holds the king's heart in his hand, you see. This is your own petty stuff according to your law, Jews. He doesn't like them. You stand back from the passage, and here's what you get now when you stand back and look at it. Here's what you see. The whole time the Lord's been working, and you've missed the encouragements. Let me give them to you. First, you'll notice here, now Christianity, because of this, was given permission in Corinth. It didn't have permission, it just got permission. And Paul said, well, then I need to stay. Now it was publicly recognized. Gallio would do nothing against it. That gave it credibility. Second, verse 2, and he found a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because of Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. And he went to see them, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them and worked, for they were tent makers by trade. This is what happened. So you'll notice here, all of a sudden these encouragements are coming. We're going to study Aquila and Priscilla next time. What a couple, man and woman in the faith, who ministered to Paul and helped him greatly and advanced the gospel. So here, all of a sudden, these people are surrounding Paul that are of huge consequence and huge encouragement to him, taking him in, helping him. He's working here to provide for himself, and they're caring for him. And then, number three, third encouragement, Paul stays with a man named Titus Justus. Notice verse 7. His house was next door to what? Come on. I mean, that's just awesome. Paul is next door to the synagogue with another house now. It's moved away from the synagogue. This was a break from the synagogue. The early Christians still did this for a while, but there was a clear break here, and now they're in homes. And here it is, in Titus Justus's house, a church is being established. And what does the Lord do? He brings in one of their leaders from the synagogue into the faith, Crispus, and we know Paul would baptize this family. So it says many of the Corinthians hearing Paul believed and were baptized. So now, right next to the synagogue, the church is growing. And what appeared to be like walking into a crucible, a beautiful working of God's providence was happening, and what an encouragement. The gospel was prevailing, God was saving, the Lord was accomplishing everything he intended when he sent Paul to Corinth. So what am I to say today? I pray that in the life of this church, we'll remember this. That at times, it'll seem like we're going nowhere, but it'll seem like the challenges are impossible living in this day. You know this as parents. All the routine, all the daily grind, the Lord is telling you, I don't want you giving up. I don't want you being afraid. That's his command. It's the best command you're getting. You have a Savior who's committed to not just being with you, but saving a whole bunch of more people. You know, my grandfather on my mom's side did not believe. Most sitting here have not known that. My mom, over the whole course of her life, would pray for my grandpa, pray for my grandpa. He was a hard man, a tough man, died at 92. I remember going in on his deathbed and saying to him, Grandpa, you need to believe the gospel. Do you know what the gospel is? And of course, the words came back, I've been a good person, Chris. You know, Grandpa, you've not. You've disobeyed God. This is his testimony. But I've got really good news for you. If you believe in Jesus and turn from this right now, you can be saved. I don't know what happened, but I know I was called to speak. And all of you have people like this in the course of your lives. Speak. Open your mouth. Don't give up on the project because your God's not giving up on the project. And the mystery to it all is he won't lose one. Isn't that amazing? He won't lose one. Don't be discouraged. Don't stop praying. Don't stop talking to God about this. Fulfill what the Lord has given you to do with eagerness. Even when it's hard, he'll strengthen you. He's with you to the end. He's promised that not one of the sheep will be lost. Speak, for he is committed. He is committed to this project, so we should be committed to being his witness.
Thank you for listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll-free at 888-504-8805. That's 888-504-8805. Contact us through the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. We're on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station and subscribe in iTunes or use our free Android app. We trust this program has encouraged you to trust in Christ for your standing with God and to live in His abounding grace.